From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, August 8th through Friday, August 12th, 2022. It was a week in which an unanticipated surprise story took the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. Is the 45th president of the United States the victim of a politically motivated invasion of his home and private property? Or is he, indeed, a criminal of mind-boggling proportions? Talk about being between a rock and a hard place. Do we sit back and allow a former president to be subjected to this type of weaponized government thuggery? Or do we let a guilty former chief executive perch himself above the law and not have to answer for his alleged crimes? It was also a week of more primaries, dramatic legislation, loosening COVID regulations, lower gas prices, higher food prices, and increasing international tensions. Welcome to America in the eighth month of 2022. Get ready for a powerful hour of Black Belt Talk Radio, during which your tolerance for hearing different but legitimate points of view will be tested. We've got lefties, we've got righties, and we've got fence sitters. Please don't get angry. Just listen closely and maintain a degree of educated skepticism, regardless of whether or not you agree. We'll be joined by Kevin Casey at Talkers with a countdown of the 10 biggest topics of the week. Dr. Murray Sabrin in Fort Myers, Florida on the Mar-a-Lago raid. Attorney Steve Weissman in Boston, Massachusetts on the raid and free speech. Greta Van Susteren in Washington, D.C. on changes in media and journalism. Martha Zoller in Gainesville, Georgia on the GOP primaries. And Holland Cook on Block Island, Rhode Island on staying ahead of inflation. Influential yappers from across the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations and the feelings of their target constituents with whom they do a daily dance of affirmation in a fragmented, noisy world where we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap, heard coast to coast and around the world on great radio stations across the U.S. and the U.K. The past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media. Information's gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Okay, here we go. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10 this week, the media, journalism, and the First Amendment. The political polarization of the nation has raised a number of issues in which the very objectivity of news reporting is rightfully being questioned on all platforms, mainstream and alternative, daily newspapers to cable television networks.
Discussion of the Alex Jones case and its connection to freedom of speech and media ethics continues to reverberate throughout talk radio.
At number 9, the Hunter Biden investigation. Conservative media raised the question loudly this week, how come there's been no FBI raid on Hunter Biden's house?
President Biden's 52-year-old son has been under investigation by a grand jury in Delaware for suspect business dealings amidst alleged evidence that he accepted millions of dollars from America's adversaries in exchange for influencing his father when he was vice president and for having ties with communist China.
At number 8, COVID-19 and monkeypox. The CDC continues to loosen its guidelines on dealing with the pandemic. The new guidelines eliminate quarantines and put less emphasis on social distancing, routine surveillance testing, and contact tracing.
According to a recent study by the Annenberg Public Policy Center, when it comes to life with COVID, Americans are split. People were asked when they thought things will start getting back to normal. 4 in 10 say it already happened. 42% predict it'll be another year before things get back to normal. And 23% say we'll likely live with the virus forever.
At number 7, a three-way tie between race relations, immigration, and abortion. The southern border remains an immigration nightmare, and debate over abortion rights rages from state to state since the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. On the race front, the NBA announced it will permanently retire Basketball Hall of Famer Bill Russell's number 6 jersey throughout the league. Russell, who passed away on July 31 at the age of 88, won 11 NBA titles with the Boston Celtics and becomes the first player to have his number retired across all 30 teams.
League Commissioner Adam Silver said, "Bill Russell's unparalleled success on the court and pioneering civil rights activism deserve to be honored in a unique and historic way," adding, "Permanently retiring his number 6 across every NBA team ensures that Bill's transcendent career will always be recognized."
At number 6, the Russia-Ukraine war, U.S.-China relations, and foreign affairs. The Russia-Ukraine war grinds on with an extraordinarily high number of casualties being counted on both sides. American intelligence and military officials report approximately 500 Russian troops are being killed or wounded every day, decelerating Putin's war effort to what's being described as a grinding slog. The latest concern impacting everyone is damage reportedly being inflicted on a Ukrainian nuclear power plant that could have far-reaching deadly consequences.
Meantime, U.S.-China relations grow increasingly tense in the aftermath of Nancy Pelosi's recent visit to Taiwan, and trouble continues to brew with North Korea, Afghanistan, and Iran.
At number 5, a tie between the Inflation Reduction Act and climate change. The intention of the Inflation Reduction Act 2022, if passed, is to make a historic down payment on deficit reduction to fight inflation, invest in domestic energy production and manufacturing, and reduce carbon emissions by roughly 40% by 2030.
At the time we're putting this show to bed on Friday morning, the Democrats and Republicans are still working on putting final touches on this extremely complex and controversial wide-ranging piece of legislation.
At number 4, the economy. Although inflation is still raging, especially at the supermarket where the cost of food continues to skyrocket, the price of gas has come down approximately $1 a gallon since its peak in June.
Meantime, more jobs were added, 528,000 in the month of July, giving Americans a mixed message about the economy's direction. Are better times ahead?
At number 3, crime, guns, and police. Crime stats in America's major cities continue to grow.
Much of it due to overly liberal district attorneys and judges who keep putting the same criminals back out on the streets. And of course, the insanity of police defunding.
At number 2, partisan politics and elections. As the primaries continue to unfold from state to state, political and analysts are trying to figure out how the results measure the impact and value of Donald Trump's endorsement for his favored candidates. So far, the results have been mixed and, in many cases, subject to interpretation.
Right now, all eyes are on Wyoming and the primary fate there this coming Tuesday of Republican U.S. Senator Liz Cheney, where pollsters and pundits expect her to face almost certain defeat.
And at number 1 this week, the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago, along with other Trump legal issues. This blockbuster news event has really split the nation, especially the media, along party lines. Trump supporters say such a thing has never happened to a U.S. president, indicating it is politically motivated and inherently dangerous. On the other hand, Trump detractors say it hasn't happened before to a U.S. president because never before has a chief executive committed the kinds of crimes that Trump is being accused of committing.
At the time this program is being readied for national distribution on Friday morning, more details from the Department of Justice and the FBI as to the content of the seized documents and justification of the search warrant are eagerly being anticipated by both sides, which will hopefully clarify the matter and take it beyond political spin and media speculation. Meantime, in New York, Donald Trump took the 5th while facing questioning under oath in the state's civil investigation into his business practices. So what kind of a banana republic are we, anyway? Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison rap. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison rap. Joining us now is one of the most sought-after talk show guests in America. He's Emeritus Professor of Finance at Ramapo College in New Jersey, a prolific author, and one of the leading libertarian scholars in the nation, Dr. Murray Sabrin. Dr. Sabrin, I'm sure you're all over the radio this week giving people your view on the Mar-a-Lago story, which is the number one story in the national conversation and, of course, in talk media. What is your take as a libertarian scholar on what has happened?
Well, this is another example, Michael, of government overreach. If government officials think that there was some egregious act by anyone, especially a former president of the United States, you go and speak to them, have their attorneys come in and iron out whatever issue is at hand. rather than taking 30 FBI agents armed to the teeth and raiding of someone's private residence to try to come up with information that they could get through a very normal channel.
Why do you think they did this?
Well, I think, quite frankly, it's just a way of showing force that we don't want the so-called deep state, the Biden administration does not want Trump to be a candidate in 2024, given all the missteps that the Biden administration has. And they probably feel that taking him out would make it very easier for Biden if he decides to run for re-election, would have a clearer field.
You actually think that's true, though? Some people think that that Trump is the only person Biden could beat based upon current stats and polls.
Well, that's ironic. If they think he's the if Biden can only beat Trump, then why bother him? Just ignore him instead of trying to diminish him by these raids. Just make sure that the Biden administration does whatever it thinks it's necessary in order to get someone in there that they could probably have a much more competitive environment with, which, of course, Trump is somebody that they fear because he is able to marshal people who dislike what's going on in Washington, D.C. today.
I remember you writing in some article someplace or something I read about you going all the way back to the early 90s, in which you predicted that the nation is becoming like a banana republic. Do you remember writing that?
I certainly do. In fact, I was promoting T-shirts from New Jersey because of Governor Florio's tax program, which taxed everything, including toilet paper, in the early 1990s. And I said, given everything that's happened in the country in the 1980s and early 90s, we are becoming not only a banana republic, but a high-tech banana republic, because government surveillance is increasing with all the technology that was coming down the pike with computers and cell phones were just beginning at that time. And we know now that the NSA, the National Security Agency, has the ability to monitor all our text messages, all our emails, all our telephone calls. So the game is over. We are, in effect, a banana republic.
Well, just to play devil's advocate with you, because there are many sides to this, certainly, too. What if the president of the United States, the former president, the 45th president of the United States, actually was involved in serious, serious criminal activity, unlike any president before him? Wouldn't it be just as much a banana republic for the Justice Department and the powers that be to look the other way and keep that from being prosecuted?
Well, that's a good point. But the point is that Donald Trump's a Republican and Joe Biden's a Democrat, President Biden's a Democrat. So usually in a banana republic, you go after your enemies and you keep your supporters away from prosecution. And I think this is one of the reasons that people are upset with what's going on now with the raid on Mar-a-Lago. Nothing happened to Hillary Clinton when she was subpoenaed for her emails with the private server she had in a Chappaqua home. And look what's happening to the Hunter Biden laptop. Nothing's happening so far. They've been investigating it for several years. And there is apparently substantial evidence that he was engaged in illegal activities.
Mm-hmm. But neither Hillary nor Hunter were president of the United States.
Right.
Should being president of the United States give you a pass, or should being president of the United States hold you to higher scrutiny?
Yeah, everyone should be accountable in government, Michael. This is why libertarians are opposed to someone getting a free pass for any egregious activities they do. President Nixon didn't get a free pass. The House was going to impeach him, and so he resigned instead. He was probably going to be convicted because of all the involvement in the Watergate cover-up. Bill Clinton was impeached because he apparently lied to a jury, but he wasn't convicted in the Senate. Hillary Clinton so far got a pass, and so has Hunter Biden, even though he's being investigated. So the whole point is that no one should be given a free pass when there's evidence or potential evidence that they've committed an act of criminality.
Are you concerned that this is going to further the rift between the left and the right in America to the point where we are in danger of the violence reaching a level that we could be facing something akin to a civil war?
Well, this is always the danger in any pluralistic society, especially as large as the United States with 330 million people. The country has never been polarized, probably since the Civil War. And the reason it is because you have different ideologies about how to govern. And so I hope and pray that we can settle our differences peacefully, have elections, and have the peaceful transition of power. But as we know, there's evidence that some of these elections are tantamount to fraudulent activities that go around in different parts of the country where there could be close races. So we need to have transparency. We need to have making sure elections are honest and fair and let the chips fall where they may in a democratic process.
That's Dr. Murray Sabrin. He's Emeritus Professor of Finance at Ramapo College in New Jersey, a prolific author, and one of the leading libertarian scholars in America. To learn more about him, visit murraysabrin.com or check out his books at amazon.com. Coming up next, more on Mar-a-Lago and the First Amendment. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Bernadette Duncan spent 26 years as a radio talk show producer. In her new book, Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, she shares her adventures in the trenches of big-time talk radio during the changing backdrop of America's pre- and post-9/11 realities. This exciting story includes Bernadette's impressions of the quirky celebrity talk show hosts whom she served during her career: Larry King, Sally Jesse Raphael, Gil Gross, Tom Snyder, Lou Dobbs, Charles Osgood, and more. It's full of anecdotes about hundreds of high-profile guests from media, show business, and politics. Also quirky, ego-driven, and neurotic. Yappy Days, Behind the Scenes with Newsers, Schmoozers, Boozers, and Losers, an analytical look at the media, journalism, and the complex nature of ego. Get it now at Amazon.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap, let's check in with another college professor with a strong talk radio following. His name is Steve Weissman. He's a professor of law at Bentley University in Boston, a prolific author, and the founder of the crime-fighting website, Scamicide.com. Steve, I got to tell you, there's so much going on this week about the law. Originally, you and I were going to talk about Alex Jones, and I want to touch upon that, but I'd also like to get your quick impressions of what's going on with the whole Mar-a-Lago story that is clearly the most talked about topic in talk media. Just so folks know, you and I are having this conversation midweek, so there may be other developments, but what are your impressions of the whole thing?
You know, here again, so much of it sometimes gets blown out of proportion and what of the accuracy. I think one of the things that struck me, it was a legitimate search warrant, but it was one that had been discussed by Trump's lawyers within the last week with the Justice Department. So when they exercised it may or may not have been a surprise, but the fact that it was going to happen was not a surprise on Trump. It's also, we should focus on the particular charge involved, and this is something that deals with him taking allegations of him taking privileged classified records that were illegal, absolutely illegal for him to remove from the White House. There have been reports, including so-called photos of him tearing up some of these things and flushing them down a toilet, but there's so many possible allegations against Trump, much of which are related to January 6th. This does not relate to January 6th, but it is quite serious flaunting of the law, and I for one am glad the FBI is following up on this.
Well, you know, it's like we're between a rock and a hard place. If the FBI and the Justice Department don't follow up on it, it sends a message that somebody, a president in this case, could be above the law. If they do follow up on it, it sends the message that the government is conspiring to bring Trump down and to destroy him.
No, you're right.
The spins are amazing.
they are truly between the rock and the hard place. People are going to be upset no matter what. I do think it's also important to note that the director of the FBI is a Trump appointee. This is not a Biden guy that put the final agreement to this. So, I totally think you're right. I am fearful of violent kind of results and demonstrations if and when Donald Trump ever is put on trial, either civilly or criminally.
All right, let's pivot now to Alex Jones, because that, too, has tremendous impact in terms of conversation and talk media, because he is, among many things, a member of the talk media community. What are your latest thoughts and findings?
Yeah, you know, it was startling. It is very, very difficult under American law to find a media personality guilty of defamation. And Alex Jones has had many instances where he's been charged and then settles. His slanderous allegations in regard to what was known as Pizzagate, that Hillary Clinton was operating a child sex ring at the basement of a pizzeria in Washington, there was someone who took it seriously, came in there with a gun and shot up the place trying to save the children. I mean, that is just one of many instances where he has recklessly defamed people and taken that pulpit and really sullied it quite a bit. So if you were saying anything against a public figure, and the parents of the Sandy Hook kids, by being involved in that issue, are a public figure, you have to prove not just that you are saying things that are wrong about them, but you have to prove that it was done either deliberately lying or with a reckless disregard for the truth. So this is one of the very, very rare instances where Jones and the media were held responsible, and I think it's proper. And this is just one lawsuit. It was, you know, about $50 million in damages between $4 or $5 million compensatory, just to compensate them, and then that larger $45 million punitive damages, which is the jury saying that this is outrageous and this is conduct that should be punished. That's just this one family. There are other lawsuits against him by other families of Sandy Hook parents that are just not quite at the completion stage in Connecticut. But here again, Jones has generally... he has defaulted on these. He hasn't even taken the trials were only about the amount of money to be paid, because he refused to turn over records that he was required to, and therefore was defaulted. So Jones is he's getting his comeuppance. The question is, are other media personalities going to learn from this, either not to slander and not to say conspiracy, or are they going to be more subtle about it? Are they going to say people are saying, or there are allegations out there, without really taking that on and saying it as if it's their fact? I think it's going to be more of the latter.
Or not going so far, you know, the old expression, jumping the shark, where they take on a cause that is so clearly a lie and so clearly outrageous. In other words, reel it in a little bit. Because every analysis that I have read or heard or watched about the Jones situation is that he personally is probably now on the way out in terms of center stage in the national conversation. But his influence on the media and his influence on the toxicity of the conspiracy culture has been profound, and will be feeling, you know, the residue of it, and maybe even a heightening of it with smarter conspiracy theorists, you know, knowing how to avoid getting in trouble following in his wake.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. The one thing I would add, which is when I tell my students at Bentley University, I tell them the answer to every question is it's about the money. And so is Alex Jones some political pundit? No, he's in it for the money, has made a lot of money, and has found that his type of conspiracy theories and, you know, appeal to a number of people who he can sell them a wide variety of totally unnecessary products for the coming apocalypse that he's pushing. And there are people that are seeing this, that you can take that pose, you can play that character, you can play up these prejudices and biases, and you can make money from it. And to me, perhaps that's the scariest thing, because you have people that will just be exploiting the conspiracy-minded people out there, the ones who are still looking at QAnon, and make money from it. And as long as they can, they will. But like you said, perhaps a little bit more carefully than Alex Jones.
That's Bentley University in Boston professor of law and the founder of Scamicide.com, Steve Wiseman. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Last week, we played an excerpt from my current guest on the Michael Harrison Interview podcast, Newsmax TV talk show host Greta Van Susteren. Now let's dip into that conversation again for her take on the state of media and journalism in America. How does it feel to be back doing a nightly television show on cable TV? And how's it going, this new relationship that you have with Newsmax?
Let me just put it very succinctly. I love it. And it may be that I'm still on the honeymoon of being on a new network, but I left cable, daily cable, about 6 years ago or 5 or 6 years ago and thought I was finished. Then I discovered that I really missed it. It's fast. It's engaging. Chris Ruddy, who's the CEO of Newsmax, has given me free rein to use my very good judgment doing the show. I have a smart staff. I've got a great, I have a good studio. I've got, so it's exciting, and I have a travel budget. I've already been to Ukraine twice and reported for Newsmax. I'm going to be doing some more international travel as well as domestic stories. I'm able to, as I've had with all my networks, whether it's been CNN, Fox, or MSNBC, I get politicians on both sides of the aisle. Last night I had, for instance, White House's John Kirby. He was on. I get Senator Mark Warner. I get Senator Rick Scott, Senator Tim Scott. I'm getting everybody from both sides of the aisle. I think they are finding the show engaging. I'm covering Pelosi's trip, or it's almost over. But so it's like, I'm a curious person. So this is the perfect home for me. I get to do this every night, and it's exciting.
That's wonderful. That type of inspiration and that type of engagement really keeps a career such as yours, fresh and vital. And I'm so happy to hear that. I've known Chris Ruddy for decades, since when he first started Newsmax, and he's cut from a different cloth than most of the broadcast executives in the business today. Not to disparage anybody, but he is, use that old expression, the cliche, out of the box thinking. Chris Ruddy is known for that, and what you see is what you get. So I don't think you're in for any surprises in terms of
And I agree, and I've known him for a couple of years, and the other thing is that, because I've been at all the networks, I can compare and contrast.
Yeah.
And one of the exciting things about CNN when I got there is essentially a startup. The Gulf War just happened. They've been on the air for a while, but they've been referred to as Chicken Noodle Network. And I got there, and it was on its huge upswing. Then when I moved over to Fox News, likewise, it had not been number one. But the first month I got there, they were number one, and they were excited, and they had that enthusiasm of a startup. Then I went to MSNBC and look, it didn't work out for me. I was there 6 months and I got fired. But setting that aside, it was not an exciting place to be because it had a long reputation of NBC, decades and decades, and become very corporate. And if you are talent, or if you're a journalist or reporter, you don't want to have to answer to committees and have all sorts of, decades and decades of rules. What I have at Newsmax is that it has that same sort of excitement because it's growing very rapidly. It's going through a lot of changes. It's adding a lot of reporters, and it has that excitement that's contagious. It's fun to be there. And Chris is accessible. You don't have to go through 10 layers to get to him. I texted him this morning, and I got a response.
Yeah.
He's accessible. That makes all the difference in the world.
It does make a difference, and it harkens back to the day when major media outlets could turn on a dime and be flexible and respond to things because they did not have in the earlier times that type of corporate layers of bureaucracy that make things just get bogged down in nothing. Chris has that ability. You mentioned you were fired from MSNBC, and was it painful to have that experience of being fired from a network gig?
I I had never been fired in my entire life, ever. I'd always, you know, I work hard, and I didn't see it coming because a week before they fired me, they issued a press release saying that my ratings were up 94%, I think, over the other show I had replaced in less than 6 months. And that was extraordinary. So, you know, so I never saw it coming because, you know, who fires a show that's succeeding or an anchor? Mm-hmm. So obviously there were other things going on. They've got their own demons and their own ideas. And I do my job. I do it fairly and factually. I don't take orders from people that I think are inappropriate. I listen to guidance. But if I think that someone's telling me to do something that I think is intellectually untrue or is not being straight with the viewers, you know, I don't do it.
Over the years that you have been in the media, we have seen, and I have been following it very closely, a transition to targeted audiences where, you know, Fox is known for as conservative, and then One America News comes out and they're even more to the right. And it reminds me of the old positioning we used to do back in music radio. Well, let's play this kind of music for those kind of people. In other words, you target the audience as opposed to put something out there and see what you attract. And this is becoming an increasing mode of operation in terms of the business, certainly during the years that you've been a player. What has your observation been, having worked at all of the different networks, all of whom are known either, you know, officially or unofficially as targeting a certain kind of listener politically in terms of ideology? What is your observation of this trend, and what are your thoughts about it?
Well, I think I'm a bit of an oasis. When I was at CNN, nobody told me what to do. Mm-hmm. When I was at Fox, nobody told me what to do. I've been with Chris Ruddy at Newsmax. Nobody has told me what to do other than to do my best job. I can tell you that I've traveled the world. I'm very fact-driven because I have a background. I practiced law. I studied evidence. I even taught evidence at Georgetown Law School as an adjunct professor. So I'm very fact-driven. There's no secret who I am or what kind of show is. And I think it shows Chris Ruddy's vision is that what he wants to do is he wants to have a big tent. And by a big tent is he wants a very heavily fact-driven show, but he also wants to have opinion because opinion is important. It's robust. It's what makes us a strong democracy when we have a robust debate. Every network has opinion and fact. What has changed, though, over the years is that regrettably, the fact shows versus the opinion shows that there has not been so much a yellow line, a bright line to separate, which I think is why you read now that the new owners of CNN are a little distressed by their lineup because their journalists have worn their politics on their sleeve, and now they're trying to dial it back with the new ownership, same way to get back to the old model where there is fact news-driven shows, and then there is opinion. I try not to give any of my opinions. I'm flattered because people come up to me all the time and say they don't know how I vote.
That's Newsmax TV talk show host Greta Van Susteren with another excerpt from my conversation with her on my podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview. You can hear the whole thing at mhinterview.com. Coming up next, a visit to the Peach State. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
This report is brought to you by Genesis 2 Project, G2P. Recently, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, released a preliminary report on possible threats posed by UFOs, now known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, UAP, and the progress the Department of Defense UAP Task Force has made in understanding any threats. Dr. J.C. Van Valkenburg is a former Los Alamos National Lab biophysicist who has been working with G2P to bring scientifically sound UAP data to the public.
G2P has released the first scientifically authenticated documentation of UAPs, including images captured with infrared technology. Primo Forensics performed the digital forensic analysis.
In tandem with the ODNI report, these data support the development of relevant processes, policies, technologies, and training for the U.S. military and government personnel upon encountering UAP.
Visit Genesis2Project.com.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. Partisan politics and the primary elections leading up to the midterms, as well as 2024, have been dominant factors this past week on the talk shows of America. Here to give us her perspective is one of the most politically astute and influential radio broadcasters in the Peach State, Martha Zoller of Big Signal WDUN in Gainesville, Georgia. What are your first impressions here in terms of looking out at the nation and the ongoing primaries in terms of the Republican Party?
Well, I tell you, of course, the big one next week, and it's normally not a big one, is Wyoming. Everybody's looking to see what's going to happen to Liz Cheney. And, you know, it doesn't look good for her, but she's pulled out the big gun. She's got Dick Cheney doing an interview, an ad for her, and we'll see what happens. Right now, of the people that voted for impeachment against President Trump, three of those 10 have lost in primaries. Four have made it through, and three are still to come. So we'll see what happens with all of that. But the big earth-shattering thing, of course, was this raid on Mar-a-Lago that happened at the beginning of the week. And it was as if overnight, not support for Donald Trump, but a unification of the Republican Party. I don't know if that's what they were going for, but the Republican Party is now motivated to vote even more than they were. And that was one of the biggest problems that Democrats were having, especially in Georgia, which is going to be a key state again, is that they're not motivated to get out. Now, there are Democrats that think that the possibility of Donald Trump running is going to motivate Democrats, but I don't think in the midterm it will. I think in the midterm, this kind of raid at Mar-a-Lago has caused Republicans to think we got to get out and vote.
Do you think that there's any downside, though, in terms of Republican votership? Are there Republicans who are saying, oh, gosh, now there's even less chance of Trump winning a general election because those who don't like him or those independents out there who are on the fence are not going to look at the deep state and the conspiracies and the political motivation and all that, but rather look at it as maybe Trump is guilty of all these crimes. You know, this can go in so many directions.
I may be alone on this GOP island, but for the last 6 months or so, what I've been saying, even longer than that, is that his support is getting less and less and less. And the last number I saw, which was this week, was a third of Republican voters want him to run for president. Now, is that enough to win a primary? I don't know yet. Okay, I don't know what's going to happen. But we just got to see what happens. I am hoping he does not announce before the midterm, because I think that hurts Republicans if he announces whether he's running or not before the midterm. I do think the Republicans are set to take back the House. They may or may not take back the Senate. In Georgia here, where we have Herschel Walker running against Senator Raphael Warnock. Raphael Warnock has spent already $25 million in negative ads against Herschel Walker that have largely gone unresponded to. They just started responding this week, the Herschel Walker campaign, but they are still within the margin of error. They've been in the margin of error since the beginning of this race. So even with $25 million of negative ads, they're still in the margin of error.
Does Herschel Walker have any kind of positives attached to him aside the fact that he's a Trump guy? I mean, is there a case to be made why he should be elected?
Well, actually, the Trump thing doesn't really factor into Herschel Walker as much as it does some of the other Trump endorsed candidates, because he had 100% name ID in Georgia anyway because of his football career at the University of Georgia.
Good point.
The University of Georgia won the national championship this year, which, you know, you don't want to say that has an impact, but that didn't hurt. So he is certainly a difficult candidate. He is not your typical candidate. He's not doing your typical kind of campaign events. But again, even with tens of millions of dollars being spent against him, he is polling basically where he's been polling the entire time.
Looking over the border at Ron DeSantis, some people say he's the front runner now. Of course, you know, that's all based upon speculation, hearsay, wishful thinking, and errant poles. But what's your view of him? Because he's not that far from you. Not that we judge people by our proximity to them all the time in this, you know, shrinking global village. But what's your take on DeSantis's position within this circus?
I think if he wins Florida, if he wins re-election by 56% or so, then he's in good shape to actually challenge Donald Trump. I don't know if Donald Trump is going to want him to challenge him. I don't know if he will challenge Donald Trump. But what I will say is I think he's got the right policies with a much better presentation, and he doesn't put a foot wrong as far as kind of ancillary stuff. People may not like his policies, but he's very well spoken, and he doesn't make a mistake when he's presenting his ideas.
Do you think that Donald Trump really expects to run for president, or do you think he's keeping this alive for the sake of raising money and having a defense against all of the many, many different attackers legally that he is facing, including in Georgia, that he can claim it's politically motivated by making it seem he's going to run? What do you personally think?
Well, there are people around him. There are several people around him, Peter Navarro and others, that look at it as his third term as president. They believe that the election was stolen, and they think that he is going to run, and they want him to run, and all of that. I just don't know yet whether he's going to run or not. I know most people around me think he definitely is, but I think that he has been an unpredictable person, and he might prefer to be a kingmaker. I don't know if that's wishful thinking on my part or not, but I think he might prefer to be a kingmaker.
That's radio talk show host Martha Zoller of Big Signal WDUN in Gainesville, Georgia. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. We have time for one more. The economy remains near the top of the talker survey this week, and even though gas prices have come down about a buck a gallon, the cost of food, rent, and other necessities continue to put a strain on the backs of American families. Media consultant Holland Cook joins us again with his series on inflation hacks. I know you have been getting tremendous response to your ebook, Inflation Hacks, Save Those Benjamins. And one of the cool things about it is you're inviting listeners all over talk radio around the country to contribute their own inflation hacks. What are some of the new ones that people have been suggesting?
What a concept. Talk radio actually listening. And rather than just complaining about inflation, we are sharing ways to save money when every dollar counts so much. Not surprisingly, there's a lot of suggestions being posted on the blog about grocery shopping. And Gabriella gave me 8 great suggestions, and we don't have time to tick off all 8. But here's one that everybody can act on the very next time you go shopping. She's buying fold-top sandwich bags rather than those Ziploc-type bags, which are much more expensive. Because if you're just bringing a sandwich to work, it's not going to spoil within 3 or 4 hours. And she speaks of whipping up a tasty ceviche using a can of sardines, which is much easier to work with than fresh fish or shrimp or crab meat, she says, and much less expensive. And she says, who would have thought it would be a hit with my picky son? So she's now trying canned salmon. And this is the kind of creative stuff in the kitchen that can really add up. The number one thing you want to beware of when you go into the grocery store, never go there when you're hungry or angry or hangry, because you're going to go for those serving size portions, which are darn convenient, but what you're paying for is packaging and the labor to assemble it, as you will see comparing the unit price with bigger sizes that you can bag up yourself. And it's time to demote meat from its starring role to the supporting cast, a listener writes, talking about casseroles and soups and stews. And the bottom line on grocery shopping is, regardless of how carefully you shop, you're racing the clock, because the thing about food is that it expires. And one listener talked about slightly stale bread makes great French toast, or you can use it for breadcrumbs. And of course, you can freeze breads, bagels, and muffins. You let them thaw overnight, they're good as new. And somebody suggested overripe bananas. You turn them into banana bread if you're baking, or throw them in the freezer. and then later you mash them up in the food processor. It's a yummy dessert that's also healthy.
I am big on frozen bananas. I freeze, I cut them into little chunks, put them into bowls, put them in the freezer. Then I throw a little cereal on them and milk, and the milk freezes around the frozen bananas, and it tastes like vanilla ice cream.
A rich source of potassium.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. I was looking over some of the materials on your blog, which is called andyoucanquoteme.com, which is a mouthful, where people can find out more about this. And it says, number 22, ask for a raise. That intrigued me. What is that all about?
The issue is that the help wanted sign is everywhere. And during the pandemic, a lot of people did a lot of thinking and reassessment. And why am I working so hard? And maybe they're going to be a little more choosy about how they spend their time. And there has never been a seller's market like this full employment economy that has the help wanted sign everywhere. So no matter who you are and what you do, the best deal on wheels is the guy or gal you see in the mirror. Because if you have a certain set of skills, somebody wants it. And if your boss has recently dumped a couple of more duties in your lap because of these desperate times we live in, or because there are open positions there, you're in a good position to ask for a little something extra for doing a little something extra and fearing that you might find greener pastures elsewhere. I think your boss will be receptive to that conversation.
A couple of weeks ago when we talked about this, you were talking about negotiating. I said some people feel squeamish about negotiating, that it might come across as uncouth in certain situations. Do you think that there's the fear? Well, certainly people may have the fear that if they go to their boss and they ask for a raise because they're doing more work or helping in these hard times, that it could backfire in them and they'd lose favor with the boss?
I think this is the wrong time to be shy, especially if you are stretched at work. As I said, you may have had extra duties given to you, and just lay it out for the boss. Ron, I'm getting home at 6:30 every night. This is putting a stretch on me, and I bleed team colors. I'm willing to pitch in and do what I can, but how about a little something for the effort?
Yeah. In other words, it's how you go about doing it as opposed to demanding it or putting the boss in a corner or challenging the boss's authority or character.
Yeah. Sit on the same side of the table as the boss. You know, be a team player.
Right. Now, in the big picture, you put a lot of thought into the creation of this ebook, Inflation Hacks Save Those Benjamins, at andyoucanquoteme.com. All right, we get all that in there so people can react to this. The news now is that maybe there's a light at the end of this inflation tunnel. Gas prices are coming down, and there seems to be signs of relief in sight. What are your personal feelings about the future of this inflation trend?
Well, in terms of the gas thing, keep your eye on the ball. Just yesterday, I had to fill up, and several miles apart, I found a 20-cent per gallon difference.
And you're still doing this process whereby people that subscribe or buy the ebook, Inflation Hacks Save Those Benjamins, also become participants. And they can share their views, and that gets put into the latest iteration of the book. And when they subscribe to the book or buy the book, you update them for free. You send them the latest iteration every time you update it. Is that all still happening?
It sure is. And I wish there was room. I put everybody's picture on the cover. But this is the beauty of the ebook. And once upon a time, you used to run the presses every month and print up a tabloid-sized talker's magazine. But look how quickly we can move now with a PDF that you download. So that's the deal. I chose the minimum price. I wanted to sell it for $1, but the app that I'm using to sell it online, the least you can sell something for is $3. So the least I could do is every time I gather some more suggestions, I revise the whole book, and then I send the latest copy to everybody who ever download one.
That's media consultant Holland Cook with consumer tips from his ebook, Inflation Hacks, Save Those Benjamins. You can learn more at the website andyoucanquoteme.com. And that about does it for this latest installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap. an overview of the national conversation, looking back at the week of Monday, August 8th through Friday, August 12th, 2022. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I can be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. The Michael Harrison Wrap. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications, presented in association with Talk Media Network and Talkers Magazine. Copyright 2022, all rights reserved.